Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
After a bit of a hiatus in podcasting, I'm just doing a running podcast of Dennis's talk about mining in the Blue Mountains National Park. And I'm up here just setting up his video projector and old computer, and we're just waiting for it to get going. And Dennis is all working away. And there's about, it's a gardening club, and there's about, I suppose 20 people all excited here, all top of the morning. And as expected, when he switched on his computer, it said starting to reconfigure Windows, and now it's just as slow as a wet week, this old machine. So I may be going back to my house to get my computer to pick this all up. We'll just see how it all goes. And Dennis is away over here, and we'll go through a PowerPoint presentation. I've just got my old data projector from school here ready to go. Be with you in the next installment of What's Going On. Back again, it's been going for about 10 minutes now, and it's now to a final please wait. It's a Windows 7 Home Premium. Preparing to configure your Windows, do not turn off your computer. I think I might hey Dennis, would you like me to go? I'll just get my computer at home, and that'll be ready within whenever. Or I can check if there's one in the club.
I shouldn't have put it on the bloody computer last night. Every now and then I put it on to update it.
Oh, you put it on the...
I put it on my...
All right. Well, there you go. It's off. And it could be doing this forever. So what I'll do...
Right on, mate.
Do you mind if I go get my computer?
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And that'll be, what, half an hour?
Yeah. Half an hour?
No, not half an hour. Just the amount of time for me to get home, get in the door, pick the computer up, the power supply, get going. But on the way out, I'll check on the club if they've got a spare laptop to it. So it's just one of these things. It's a nightmare, especially Windows 7. With the modern updates, it could take the end of time to do. So let's get going. I'll get up and do it. Okay, Wilco.
Dennis,
who's
going to give us a bit of information on the Blue Mountains.
Do you want me to run the show?
Yeah.
Do you want to take the glass out of the way?
I've just joined Springwood Sports.
Okay, I'm doing for Dennis.
Well, we'll just all get set up here. Wires everywhere.
Okay, so I'm actually running the show, and Dennis has got his pointer. I built him a laser pointer, but the battery went flat. Add a little laser, and I'll advance it.
This is just a short thing. I got interested in mining energy, because I'm doing a book myself. I said, oh, okay, well, that's all right, I didn't mind that. Yeah, took him 10 years to develop that beautiful book he put out, The Burning Mist of Time or something in the Blue Mountains. It cost about $60, and if you're interested in mining up in that area and all the history, that's a very good text to get. And Phil's done a lot of research, especially on the Blodgett Railway, which we'll mention. Okay.
Oh, yes, you are.
Okay, it all started when people started poking around the Blue Mountains, and the Reverend W.B. Clark, geologist, he found coal in the Blue Mountains, and there is a fair bit of coal around the place in the Blue Mountains. But the interesting guy is Campbell Mitchell. Mitchell was the fourth son of Sir Thomas Mitchell, who was very famous for doing all the survey work around in the Blue Mountains. And he was an amateur geologist, and he had a real flair for finding shale, or turbidite as we call it. And he found shale seams all up through the Blue Mountains. And
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. So in 1871, Reverend Clark, he noted two seams, as did Professor T. W. David. Mitchell and T.S. Moore was a very famous industrialist, as everyone knows, in those days, took up 640 acres in the Megalong Valley. It was known as the Glen Shale Mine. Now, Mitchell explored east of the Narrow Neck because he realised the shale was probably travelling through the Narrow Neck, and he found the shale in the Jameson Valley up in the ruined castle area. In fact, there was a whole blob of shale that went through there. Now, a gentleman called Kahn in 1903, he wrote this fabulous book. I managed to get a copy sent down from some library in Queensland. And he did a survey of all the shale mining areas up to that time. And this was the geological map that he, unfortunately, it's a bit small, it's shown up here, but it shows you all the different seams running through the Narrow Neck and all this thing here. So the shale went from the Glen Shale Mine, and there's approximately 500,000 tonnes of shale estimated in that area. And it was very rich shale. It was some of the richest shale in the world. It had over 80% hydrocarbons. Okay. Then along came John Bretty North. Now, John Bretty North, some people call him the Alan Bond of that period, but I don't want to insult poor old John, because he wasn't an Alan Bond, he was a bit better than that. He was more like a Twiggy Forrest, I think. So John Bretty North, he registered a company called the Katoomba Coal Mine in 1878, and he wanted to mine the coal below the Orphan Rock. So in 1879, he opened up the seam, and they hauled a 200 kilogram block up the hill, hauled it by rope, and they took it down to Sydney to an exhibition, where it won a prize. And from that, the coal was judged as such high quality that he won a 1,000-tonne contract from the government to deliver coal to Redfern, I assume for the railways being close to Everly there. Okay, he had no way of getting coal up to the top. So he hired a famous engineer called Norman Self. Now, Self was a very famous engineer at the time, and he was to build a two-track, two-foot gauge incline via a small tunnel at the top of the valley floor to lift the coal to the top. And from then it was taken by bullocks over to the railway. Everyone remembers Shell Corner up on the, just past Katoomba, in the old days when you drove up the old highway? Well, that's roughly where the terminal was, up near Shell Corner. And this incline would be steam powered with an engine house, and was built for the winch and the later tramway to replace the bullocks. Self was a very famous engineer. He did a lot of things. In fact, he designed all the tramways and everything at the Hartley Shale Mine. And in fact, the suburb of Normanhurst in Sydney was named after him. Okay. Now, this photograph is blown up from a very small one off the internet, but this gives you an idea of the incline coming down and the workings down the bottom. But we'll see better with a following slide. Okay, this is the incline coming down. I'll just go up and point up here. Now, this, you see, they were lucky because there were two fishers in the area who were able to get through, and one of them had a small tunnel at the end. So what Self did, he actually opened up that small tunnel so to allow room for the railway and the skiffs to go through. So that gave them perfect access down to the valley with the tramway. So it was a two-track, two-foot gauge tramway. Now, I wish this had shut up a bit better, but I'll just explain what it is. Okay, here we have the tramway coming down. There's some workings down at the bottom. First of all, there's a tramway up here. There's the mine ordered up here. There was a double incline tramway coming down here. The coal comes down here through what we call a tippler, loaded into the trucks, and then taken up the incline. The incline was a double incline, which means the trucks coming up loaded at the same time as trucks coming down empty. And so, but they have to cross over, so there was a double. Next one, mate. So there were a double crossover, so when the trucks came down, they crossed over and changed tracks. When they were full, they had to go up on the western end side so they could be loaded onto the tramway to go out to Shell Corner. Okay, mate, next one. This is another just shot of the tramway double track coming up down through there, so through the fissure in the rock. So I was just lucky, there's two fissures there, but that one there had the tunnel which they were able to go through. Okay, mate. This is just a bit of a drawing showing the elevations of the incline. Okay, and do you see how steep it is? I think it's about 55 degrees at its worst point. They say it's the steepest railway in the world. Okay, mate, next one. Okay, so what they had to do, they had to put some engine houses. So here we've got the administration building, then we've got the engine house with the boilers. One steam winch for the incline and one steam winch for this tramway track. So you see these tramway tracks running out here. And if you go on to the next one, so this two-way track tramway was built between the incline head and the north siding, which was over at Shell's Corner. The skips were propelled by an endless cable laying on top of the skip. The track required two bridges, and one of them was a suspension bridge. And at the siding, the coal was put through screens before loading onto the rail track, so they had to screen it for size and that sort of thing. Now this photograph is a pity that, you know, because of the light, they just had come up as bright as they should. But this is the tramway track running through here. There's a timber bridge. Timber bridge here, one of those, which is called the Howe Bridge, so they had to build timber bridge. You know, this is an amazing sort of...
Technology, don't trip over it.
You can just imagine these things. This tramway used to work at roughly a slow walking pace, so the cable was going, it was a 6 kilometre round loop cable running around just pulling these skips along. They used to snap all the skips onto the cable with a chain. They'd come up and just pick up this chain, snap it around the rope and it'd rip, and the cable would pull the skips along, and at the end they'd unsnaffle them, push them out to the area where they were put through the screens. Okay, it was 1883 before this mine was in full operation. So in 1888 there were 23 miners employed underground and 60 workers on the surface. So between June and December 1888, 65,680 tonnes of coal was produced. Okay, now in the meantime, at Wentworth Falls, a company was set up called the Gladstone Coal Company. Now this company was registered in 1883 with mined coal at the Wentworth Falls area. So in 1884-85, a 2 kilometre elevated ropeway to carry the coal from the mine to Wentworth Falls was installed by an engineer called Oscar Schultz. Now Oscar Schultz had migrated to Australia and he was a very top class engineer. And he ordered a system from Adolf Bleichardt and Company from Leipzig, Germany. Now Bleichardt had obtained a patent for this improved ropeway system. It was far better than all the ropeway systems that had been developed before. His system was running two cables. He had an in cable out and the cable coming in with a load, and the skip would run along this cable, and he had a haul rope which was separate, which would pull them along. So they'd pull along and they'd just roll along the track. So, and he had a few patents. He had different patents on the balancing, the tension system. He had a patent on the way the skips connected to the haul rope. So it was a very improved system for ropeways. Okay. Now this, if anybody knows Fairmont, yeah. Down near the tennis courts, you can actually walk down here. And so the ropeway went down from the Gladstone Mine, which is down in the Gladstone Pass. Ropeway went up to the highway up here, Wentworth Falls, up near the highway up here. Okay, and there was an engine. There's a tension bit there to provide the tension for the cable and the engine block. So if I've got to go down the opening down there myself, but if you go down quite through the tennis courts, you can see the engine mountings and everything where the ropeway went through. Okay, so that was the Gladstone Coal Company. Next one.
Does anybody have any questions while we're...
Next one. Right. There was a great fanfare. Train loaded, people came up, the usual thing, great feasting when the mine was open. But it wasn't any good because somebody probably didn't check the ash content of the coal. It was 23%, so when you burnt the coal, it wasn't very efficient. You're left with a whole pile of ash. So the mine collapsed after 1886. So there's only 1,200 tonnes of coal that ever been mined out of it. In 1887, the shareholders decided to cease operations, and in 1892, one of the directors of Banker T.S. Richardson was jailed for fraud. Poor old Schultz, who fixed up, he'd put in the ropeway, he'd ordered off Bleichardt. He was given the ropeway as part payment, and I was told that he auctioned it on the steps of the Supreme Court, and was purchased by John Brady North for his Katoomba shale operation. Okay, now Torbenite shale. Okay, now, in 1885, although he was mining at the Orphan Rock Coal, he sent out one of his miners called Garbutt to work out to the ruined castle, get a track out there and investigate what was out there, and get a hold of this western block of the Megalon Valley seam that came through Narrow Neck. It was a 12.5-inch seam of thickness of high-quality torbenite, totalling 504,000 tonnes. It was stated that it could be moved out of the valley to the base of the incline by an overhead ropeway. So why North raced in and bought the one from Gladstone.
mine. It was found to be one of the highest quality shale in the world. I think they were getting 450 litres per tonne of shale of kerosene. Now, don't forget, in those days, kerosene was very valuable because that was everyone had kerosene lamps and kerosene heating, so that's what they did. And in Scotland, the gentleman on how I got the name Torbenite, that's where it came from. He developed the system of heating, retorting the shale to get the hydrocarbons off. There was never any retorting or refining system put in at Katoomba. They used to ship the shale to Sydney, send it to Italy, it was retorted in Italy, and the kerosene was brought back. Okay. Now, so Schultz had a problem because the roadway at Wentworth Falls was only 1,800 metres and he had to go 3,225 metres. So he put in another order on Blyshart for extra cable and parts, and I assume a lot of stuff was probably made here. I assume some cable was steel cable, although some of the cable was a surface iron. The metal technology wasn't really up to scratch in those days for what it is now. So they dismantled the Glaston ropeway, took the ropes off the poles, they left the poles there, and was installed by Katoomba by 1888. There's no real records, there's no definite thing on paper when it was actually done. But they know it cost £11,000. There were 47 rope towers required over a more difficult terrain than the Gladstone mine. And the final grade out of the valley was very steep, which was to cause some problems in the future. Just drawing up a bit here. Okay, mate, next one. Okay, now you install the ropeway from the Runcastle, the installation was more difficult, as I said. It was now 3.2 kilometres, now to lift 500 metres from its lowest point. It consisted of 47 8-metre timber towers which supported the two track cables, one inbound and one outbound. And the buckets were hauled by a moving cable. Okay, mate, next one. Now this gives you a comparison of the two sites. This is out of Phil's book. You can see the top graph is the rise in feet and distance for the Gladstone coal mines. You can see it was a reasonably level ropeway with a small climb at the end. Now what installed here from the ruined castle was very steep incline down to Causeway Creek up, and then they had towers 4, 5 and 6 up in the top up here, had a very steep climb to get up to the top. Okay, mate. Now this is a picture of the unloading strafe being constructed up on the top for the ropeway. This is now located. You know where the cable car at Scenic World is? That's where it is. That's where it was.
Dennis, where's the Ruined Castle for us for again, please?
Thank you. Oh,
I'll have
to put it in.
You know when you get an echo point?
Yes.
And you look down, and you see a narrow neck, and you look around, and there's a little rock structure.
Okay.
That's the Ruined Castle.
Then it's a little mountain.
And then you've got Mount Solitary, okay?
Yeah.
And it's called the Ruined Castle, because it looks like a ruined castle from here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, go back. Okay, this straight. This is the aerial towers. This is tower number 3, going down into the valley, and this is the section where the steps came up. Were taken off the cable, manually put around, discharged to be taken down, and then. So this was the top station for the tower. Yeah, the next one. Now this is Tower 46, I think it is. This is down at the ruined castle. So this is what the towers look like. You can see the crossbars. The cables are missing off here, so I don't know whether it's after the ropeway collapsed or before it was installed, but probably after it was collapsed. So the inbound and outbound ropeways at the top, skips and the haulage cable to pull them along. Okay. So that was the typical tower. Can you sit here and imagine the job? Installing all, you can see the track through the bush.
Yeah.
Now there's another tower down there, there's a little miner's hut down in here. So there's a better photograph coming up. This is my favourite photograph. Now this is taken up near the top. Okay, this is, you can see that this is actually taken while the ropeway was moving because the buckets are distorted. In those days they had long exposure times on glass plate negatives. And so you can see the track all the way out to the ruined castle. Coming right up the cliff. And these are the ropes, and these are the buckets. One coming in and one going out. One, I can't remember which one is. One, the loaded rope is a lot thicker than the empty ropes going back.
Excuse me for interrupting. Yeah. Could you get me that chair, please? Oh. I was going to leave, but it's so interesting, I don't want to. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Okay. This is one of the shale buckets. Okay, they were made out of wrought iron and they just went in the bucket. The skips or a bucket, okay, the next one. This is one actually hanging up at old shop and scenic wheel, one hanging up on the rope. And the buckets could be tipped when they got to the top. They were taken, unhooked from the rope, moved around, tipped over, the shale fell down into another thing, tipped back, pushed around and joined up onto the ropeway again. Okay, next one. Now this was a patented device that Blyshard had for the hauling rope. The hauling rope had these little slugs on it, and when they pushed the skip along, these fingers would catch onto the slug, and then the slug would then drive the skip along. So that was patent number 4, even that was called, that particular device. Okay, next one. Okay, now ropeway had problems. In 1989, the ropeway was working well. It was delivering 80 tonnes a day. However, soon after it was reported, the problem occurred when the haul rope broke. Now, the North Cliff Top steep incline of towers 4, 5 and 6 caused most problems, with buckets breaking away. You can imagine breaking away and falling back down the rope, smashing onto the buckets following. Okay, and the soft iron track ropes were designed so as the wheels rolled over, the iron would take the shape of the wheels. But they didn't know much about metal fatigue in those days, and when they analysed the ropes, they were suffering severe metal fatigue. And so the rope failed in some places, and they even took the rope off and they replaced iron bars so the track would roll along iron bars rather than the rope. But next one. Okay, and finally, December 89 or January, nobody knows exactly the exact date, the whole system just collapsed. Just fell over in the valley. And by that time, a lot of the buckets had been removed. There was a massive shock to Schultz's reputation because it caused the ruin of the Katoomba Coal and Shale Company. The ropeway still remains all in the valley today. And I meant to pick up a book that I got from our Historical Society library. There's been a hell of a lot of research on this ropeway. There's one report on the internet dated 2015 where a whole group went down and they've analysed all the parts, found them all, logged everything, and people are starting to realise just what an achievement, what a big thing this ropeway was. Unfortunately, because of the sharp incline at the end, the system just wasn't able to handle it. Okay. Now, in stepped the Australian Kerosene and Oil and Mineral Company. Now, all you guys remember Joadja? We all went down to Joadja. Yeah, we all went and had a great day. Yeah, I think you went once again after, didn't you? You've been down twice, haven't you?
Yes.
I went the first time. Okay. Now, they were running down, so they were looking for new opportunities. So I called them the AKR, was looking for more sites, and they did a deal with North, at least in the Ruined Castle mine, and while they would mine the Glen Shale mines, which were on the other side of the Narrow Neck, which they purchased from Morton Mitchell in 1890. Now, there were 34 adits at the Ruined Castle and 16 at the Glen Shale mines. Okay, so the adit is the actual where they go in and mine the coal. Now, how are they going to get the shale up to the top? Now, this was another ingenious system, which, you know, I wish I'd been there to see this thing operating. So what they had to do, they had to put in a two-track cable tramway to get shale to the incline and then over to North Siding. They already had the tramway from the top out to Shell Corner. They had the incline. Then they had to get the shale from Megalong Valley to the incline. So what they did then, they put a tunnel through Narrow Neck, and it's called the Mount Rennie Tunnel. Nobody knows where Mount Rennie came from, but the tunnels, you can still walk through the day. My friend Noel here wants us to walk through the tunnel. I'm telling him he's got rocks in his head, but... It's full of bats, water, rocks falling down. we've got a group in the Historical Society. We go around and look at old industrial sites. You know, we take great pleasure in tramping through the bush, trying to find remnants of mines and that sort of thing. And that's
How long's the tunnel?
Oh, I'm not sure, Lowell. How long is that tunnel?
A couple hundred metres.
At least a couple
hundred. Probably 300 metres.
Yeah, 300 metres, yeah. It's not that big. It's, you know, just...
Yeah.
Yeah, so And then, but using the existing daylight tunnel, and I'll show you the maps in a minute, through the down in the Mount Orphan Rockets and so on, they got access to the Megalong Valley Mine. The ruined castle mines then used a horse tramway to connect the main to the main cable tramway. Tramway is a term, it's an English term, meaning probably a light industrial railway. They come in many forms. Some of them are pretty primitive. They're probably just a bit of track on some old sleepers, or in some of the areas, they'll probably just chop timber down out of the bush to make sleepers. And we run around looking at different inclines and tramways, and but that's what the word tramway comes from. Now, okay, now this drawing here gives you a bit of a rough idea. Mount Solitary, ruined castle. The aerial railway ran from here up to the top where Scenic World is now. Okay, the incline finishes up down here, down there, down there. So what they did is they put a tramway through this existing daylight tunnel, through another tunnel here. They built a 300 metre timber bridge over Causeway Creek, mined through Narrow Neck, came up here with two big counter wheels, which they got from this site here, and out to the Glen Shale mines, which had some inclines out here. So there's a continuous movement of trucks, skips going around, up, backwards and forward. He had a horse tramway coming out here, which brought the shale, which had to be then clipped onto this line here, so they'd have to go back out here, back around the other side. Okay, so the empty skips came in this way and the full skips went out that way. So it was quite a complex setup. Now this is out of a book, this gives you a bit of an idea. This gives you an idea of up at the north siding, the different arrangement up there for unloading the shale and sieving it and putting it into the various slots. There's the horse tramway, the bridge, the incline, the incline and the tramway out to Shell Corner, and the tramway coming out onto the Glen Shale mine. Okay, next one. Now this is the bridge over Causeway Creek. You can see.
My gosh.
That's what they did. So they knocked these things up. This is 300 feet long, 30 feet high, and these are skip. These are skips.
It's just sticks and ridge.
See the cable. See the driving cable. The driving cable ran across the top of the skips. They snaggled them onto a chain, grappled them on, they pulled them around. But they had to get around. Next one. Now this is the Glen Mount Rennie Tunnel. Just a bit of a shop, some little peering in. It had been locked up, but it has been opened up again. Okay, so that's the Mount Fruit Narrow Neck. Okay, next one. Now, they changed the incline. See, the original cold incline went all the way down the bottom here, so they shortened it up, and this is approximately where the current scenic railway finishes now. And then they had a track coming along here to bring the shale out onto the incline to take it up.
There is a mine to the right just after you get off.
I've been down there. I've got to go down there and have a look. I keep saying I'm going to do it, and I'll never do it. Okay.
Dennis, sorry. From Wales or Scotland or people like that out of Germany?
All over the place, you know? Yeah.
Well, they could be just local.
Well, they could be local, I don't know. Phil in his book's got a list of all the people that lived up there. There's a lot of research went into that.
A lot of things they brought out, Welsh miners to do stuff.
Now, the interesting thing is, how are they going to drive that? How are they going to... Oh, can you just go back to that? Hang on, two slides here. Now, when you look at this picture carefully, when you see it, you'll see there's two cables running down here. Okay, now those cables came from one of those engine houses up the top. And now the old steam engine that drove the aerial railway, 46 horsepower Blyshard steam engine, they used that to bring two cables down into the valley, up to drive the cable around here. You can just imagine this cable's running everywhere. It's just an amazing system. Okay, make that for you. This is how they did it. Cables coming off the cliff top, coming down into the valley. Okay, now this is out of Phil's book, and this shows you how, okay, the winder, the original Blatchup ropeway winder, they use that, brought the cables down through a sheave down here, brought them up into the daylight tunnel, and then out the valley. So this mine belongs to some of the cables involved in this area. They employed a guy called Dixon. You've heard of Dixon's ladders, the Narrow Neck. Dixon was an old sniffer, and he was the cable man. He was the guy who could splice cables. Yeah, he had to be an expert who was a cable man. And his name was Dixon. And so so there's the scenic railway, and as it is, of course, he's putting his skyway, which wasn't there then, of course. And so that's how they... And this is the horse tramway. OK. Oh, no, that's further along. OK, now, go back. Go forward. Now, the old Blyshup's 46 horsepower steam winder that was drive the 9 kilometre Glenshale mine endless cable. It was 84 empty and 84 loaded half cubic metre skips. As shown, the cable was carried from the winder over the cliff top, wheels down to a pair of sheaves near the old incline bottom, and then back up to the old furnace tunnel, which gave access to the daylight tunnel, and onto the Glenshale mine.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, okay, mate. Now, this is the horse tramway. There's the horse. He's pulling along his skips. Next one. Another shot. The tramway skips. The driver sitting on a chart bag and two horse. Next one. And, of course, people coming back and live down there haven't got a lift back. So here's a lady and a husband sitting in the back of the skip with the driver coming back with empty skips. And this is typical of the tramway track. Here's a point where they've got a lay-by, basically a single track moving around them with a double lay-by so they can pass skips going through. So these poor horses all day be hauling this stuff. I think each of these hills half a tonne of organoid. Okay, next one. Well, this is from Shell Railways and New South Wales book, their analysis of the whole thing. So they show you the bridge where the horse tramway came into here. Now, the unexplained thing is how they connected those skips onto the line. Imagine moving cables, trying to connect the skips onto the line. Nobody really knows how they had to do it. Because the loaded skips had to go on this upside, because that was the side where the loaded skips went out. So nobody's sure. There are some ruins there showing some workings, but nobody's sure how they did it. It must have been a hell of a job. Through the tunnel, out into the valley. Okay. Now, once the skips left the Mount Rennie Tunnel, they had to be directed to the shale or adits by two large candle wheels left over from the failed roadway. This meant that the skips had to be unhooked from the cable and rehooked to the cable, and the skips had to be manually pushed around the bend. This work was performed by workers called the hookers on and hookers off. Couldn't use that term today, I think. What these guys had to do, as a skip came along, unhook it off the cableway, push it around the wheels, and that hook it back onto the cable, vice versa, coming back the other way. Okay, mate, next one. Now, this is out of Phil's book. This is a bit of an idea of the two big counter wheels, how they were set up in a timber frame. So the cable coming through and around whatever direction to these big counter wheels. Okay, next one, mate. Now, if you're down the Megalong Valley tea rooms?
Yep.
Okay, over the road, you'll see these are the counter wheels. Now, the guy down there, he saved these from the wreckers. He made this nice little monument. And these are the two counter wheels, and that's one of the skips. So if you go down to the Megalong Valley tea rooms, look over the road, you'll actually see that.
How do you get down there?
Just drive down from Ship Lake Heath.
You might have a bus trip down there next to you.
Oh, good girl. Yeah. Don't worry, you've got to go.
Yeah, but we need the numbers.
Yeah, what you're going to do, once you get down there, she's going to take you through the bush and show you the Glenshale mine.
Yeah.
You up?
Oh, we could walk through.
How far?
I don't know. My friend Tim, I'll show you the next one. That's another shot of the wheels.
And, oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, next one. There's another. Now, Tim Myers, one of our historical... Tim's been everywhere on the mountains, and he gave me a series of photographs. That's one's wreck of a wheel laying through there. Next one. That's charging the tramway track going through the... how they cut the track through the rocks there. Another one. Tramway track. And next one. And a small bridge across one of the creeks. So Tim found them. He found them by walking through the bush from down there somewhere. Okay. Now, in 1895, there was a bank crisis caused by land speculation. And, of course, at this stage, cheap kerosene was starting to flow through from America. America was starting to pump up its oil fields, and so the kerosene was coming in quite cheap. So it caused the closure of the Glenshale mine. and followed by the Roon Castle mine in 1897. There were 16,000 tonnes of shale trimmings, what they call seconds. When they got the seconds, they just dumped them outside the mine and just shipped off the first quality. And these seconds were purchased by the Australian Gaslight Company, and they laid a tramway down there and took it out, because this stuff was also pretty good for making gas. It produced a beautiful flame, you know, for gas lighting in those days. So that's why the gas company used it too. Next one. Okay, 20,000 tonnes of shale have been removed from the Roon Castle and 60,000 tonnes from the Glen Shale, exported to Whitley for retorting, and the kerosene return was yielding 455 litres for each tonne of shale retorted. Most of the equipment are then removed by 1900 and sent to the Torbane shale mine. The ATO had moved their operations up to Torbane at this stage. Coal mining ceased in 1895, with all the leases expiring in 1906. There was some shale mining limping along after 1896, but it wasn't to a great degree. Next one. Okay. In May 1925, a group of miners formed the Katoomba Colliery Limited to supply coal to the Katoomba Electric Powerhouse. Remember the Carrington Hotel, the big chimney? They had a big generating plant in there and they needed coal. And so these guys started, they leased the mine from the North's estate. John North had died by this stage. He died in 1917. And he's buried at he's raised at the Gore Hill Cemetery. In fact, his stockbroking company was still operating until quite some time ago. And knowing among the coal left over, they purchased a steam winch from old HMAS Sydney, and they found an old North-owned Cordish boiler still up in the top. So they got all that, and the washed-out incline track was rebuilt as a single track with 47-inch gauge. And nobody can work out to this day why 47 inches. Why not 48? Why 47? Nobody knows. Okay. They had to put in a new 50-foot tunnel to reach the good coal, and a new ventilation tunnels were built. Using old material left over from the shale days, a new 330-foot track was installed to get the coal to the incline. The old-style furnace ventilation system was changed to electric system, blowers, purchased off their customer, the Carrington Powerhouse. So they were sold them the coal and they bought the power back off them. The mine was sold to the Young family in 1929. Now, this is how they used to ventilate the mines. They had this massive furnace, which they fired up, and as soon as it required air, so it sucked air out of the mine and out the flue, and so that's how they got mine air moving through the mine. And they used to put up wet canvas hessians to redirect the air to where they wanted to go to. So it was a pretty primitive way of ventilating a mine. But how much coal they had to use to pour in there, and so that was one of the old ventilating furnaces. Next one. Now this is just a sign of one of the adits down there now. Okay, next one. This is one of the coal skips that they used up down there. Next one. This is the tippler that was down there. So, okay, when they put the coal skip underneath, lifted up the thing, the coal fell in the tippler, dropped the chute down. So this was the tippler down at the bottom of the incline for loading up the chute to take to the top. Now this is the skip coming up the top over the hill. You can see the three sisters here. Okay, and they built a large gantry up there at the top of the incline, and it was a hill 130 tonnes of coal. There was a space underneath to hold two trucks at the same time, so there were a large jenny wheels found at the Roon Castle, and that was manhandled across the valley to the top of the incline. Can you imagine the work these guys had to do to get this, move this stuff around? The skip was hauled to the incline to the top of the gantry, and the coal was dumped into the bin for loading into the trucks. This is a sort of sketch of what from descriptions. So the skip came up here, dumped the coal into the bins were loaded into the trucks. Very simple system. With a winder pulling the skip up. Okay. Now, you haven't heard about the landslide. Now, Arthur Miller was a miner in 2009. He noticed a big, large crack developing in Dogface Rock there. And it finally opened up to 6 feet. It caused a great thing. The picnics up there, they had ice cream. Mr. Whippy was up there with multiple vans. People were up there waiting to see the big pull, but it never happened. And the one night, 1931, fell down, nobody saw it, nobody heard it, came up next morning and it's gone. It was probably caused by mining operations underneath, undermining the rock. Okay, next one. Okay, in May 1st, 1933, the owners decided to open up the railways and tractions. Many of the hikers went down the bottom and said, gee, mate, can you get a lift up the top? So this was a good thing, so they'd throw a plank or a bag of chaff in the back and charge them sixpence and take them up. and they could see this was going to be a bit of a money spinner. So they built a 12-seater they called Jesse. I think that Jesse's remains are still up there somewhere. It was built to run on weekends and holidays. Later, Jesse was rebuilt. It was longer in the same wheels. 15 seats was called the Mountain Devil. That's what I think. Last time I went down, that's what I think I went down in. What did you go down?
Well, it must have been around about 35, 36. Yeah. I think I was 6 or 8 or something.
Yeah. She's still there. She's still there. Yeah. Still there to tell the tale.
My mother wouldn't go down again.
She wouldn't go down. I don't blame her. Now, this is a shot. This is a shot of some people sitting in the skiff. You can see how rough the track was. You can just imagine up and down it was. And so there they are sitting in the skiff. That's one. Okay, here we are. Here's the... I think that might be Jesse, I'm not sure. Next one. And there it is, there's Jesse now, sorry. 12-seater. And they had two guys sitting at the back. They were ex-miners who had the job controlling this thing. Okay, the next one. And then we have the Mountain Devil. This one.
Yeah. That's gone now.
Yeah. Yeah, I have them. Yeah, I've been there with as a... Hey, attention.
Our teacher has spoken.
As Dory was saying, when she went down, she saw the pit ponies down there. They used to take the pit ponies up and down in this thing here. There was one guy who was an expert in getting the horses on and taking them up and down. So that's the only way they could get them up and down. It's the life of a pit pony, isn't it?
I think they were
well treated because on one of these on that skip that went up to the top, they had a sign on the side: "Please remember to water the horses." So the little sign. So, okay, this is the. This is the Mountain Devil on display up at Scenic World now. Okay, next one. Right, now in 1935, the steam winder was replaced by electric power and the Mountain Devil was extended to 24 seats. In 1945, the mine lost a contract to supply coal to the Carrington Hotel power station and the equipment was sold to the Burragarang Valley, to a Burragarang Valley coal mine. It may be under the Warragamba today. The Scenic Railway was purchased, I think it was leased originally in 1946 by Harry Hammond and his sister Isabel Fay, and it's grown into Scenic World today. Okay. Yeah, just from that simple of Harry Hammond was an interesting character. He was an electrician by trade, but he was a carrier. He had the virtual contract for carrying everything from the railway to everywhere around Katoomba. So he had in the carrying business, and he used to carry the coal from the mine to the powerhouse. So he was in a prime position when this closed to take the lease on it and start operating. But there's some monumental stories about how the development of this thing and all the equipment he had. He used to buy second-hand gear from here, from everywhere, and some of the winders and braking systems. Okay, there's little remains up there today in Katoomba in the Megalong Valley. Bushfires, you imagine, have destroyed most of the timber stuff. Nellie's Glen was a very big village. That's where a lot of the miners lived. Nellie's Glen was named after Brittany North's daughter. And they had a hotel down there, butcher shop, or village hall. That's on the start of the 6 foot track up near the Explorer's Tree. You walk down into Nellie's Land. You're going to take the crowd down there one day.
Helicopter
reception.
Anybody piggyback?
Okay, all the shale money out of it have been blown in and covered, and the Jamison Valley shale dumps burnt for some time. For years ago in the Blue Mountains went up there, you could always see a smoke haze. That was all the shale burning off. Okay, took years to burn off. Now the ropeway remains still remain on the valley floor, and that's caused a great lot of interest. There's people researching that all the time. And you can look up that Heritage, Blue Mountains Heritage, we've got a report in 2015 of what their investigations and all the bits they found. I meant to bring it along, but I forgot to pick it up and I walked out the door. Okay, the remains still sit on the valley floor, and it's interesting to many today. They personally identify all the pieces they can. There's bits of ropeway growing into trees. The trees are growing around the rope where it fell. And by analysing the rope, they can virtually tell what happened. And Phil said, tell me, you can estimate where the break happened just by looking at that original photograph I showed you of the skips coming up, you could see something in the photograph that said you could see something was failing on the ropes. Okay, now Phil, I was up one of his talks up at the Blue Mountains Historical Society, and these are some of the bits and pieces he dragged in. Example of the rope. This is a joiner. This is another patent of Blyschard, how we join the rope to these joiners, so they get joined bits of rope up by screwing into these things and joining the next one on. This is a saddle that sat on the top where the rope went across. And that's a sign off one of the buckets, the Blyschard sign. That's the joiner again. You can see the rope coming into the mix. I forget how they fixed it in there, probably with leather of some sort. Screw the next ones. That's how they're able to join sections of rope together. Next one. And that's how the rope sat on the top of the towels on the saddle, cast iron saddle. So the rope went over and across the towels on these saddles. Okay, and the nameplate, the joiner, just a bit more. And so there, that's all remains of what's left of the roadway that you can carry around. And I don't know if they're up at the Blue Mountains Historical Society of Wentworth Falls. I think they were going to try and make a display. I don't know if they did. So, in a nutshell, that's roughly a short history of mourning and the timber in Megalong Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been to the one at Hartley?
Yeah, we walked the incline at Hartley. Yeah. In fact, I was going to ring up the shale I picked up off the track and I put it down somewhere. And I might have threw it in the fire in the winter.
I know you were. Have you been to Newt?
Sorry,
Newnes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I love Newnes.
Actually, Cameron Mitchell, he actually discovered the shale at Newnes too. Okay. He was really he died very early age of mouth cancer, so but he was unlucky. He found all these things, but he was never able to commercially, for lack of money or lack of access, he was never able to get involved and make any money out of all the mining.
And that was very interesting with Newnes to follow the train line.
Oh, yeah.
Track
well,
and around the
That was another engineering marvel. Shale was very important. Actually, there was a shale system down at Emu Plains. The Mudgee Shale Oil Company had a retort down near the prison at Emu Plains. And they were retorting shale down there. And in World War II, the government walked in one day and said, "Hey, we're taking this." And they kicked them off and took the retorts, so be it at Cinder Glen Davis. And so we actually had shale retorting in this area down at Emu Plains. And when you read the report of the guy, there was a pretty primitive operation. I don't know if you saw those retorts at Joadja, you know, they'd bring brick.
Yes.
Well, these ones here, they used to wheel the shale up on a plank on a wheelbarrow across the top of the retorts and tip it in the furnace. He said if inspectors came along, they'd have died, you know, to see, see what they were doing. So it was a pretty primitive operation. Okay.
All right. Well, I don't know how you found that. I found it very interesting. And yeah, we'll definitely have to go down to Megalong Valley next year.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.